I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Travel increases your chance of getting and spreading COVID-19. Take steps to protect yourself and others. Don't travel while sick. Avoid contact with anyone who is sick. Wear a mask to keep your nose and mouth covered when in public. Avoid close contact by staying at least 6 feet or about 2 arms' length from anyone who is not from your household. Wash your hands often or use hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth, and watch your health during and after travel. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's just about 6 p.m. on a Tuesday, and that means, once again, it's time for another episode of Off the Wall.
Thank you.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this delightful Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm pretty good. I'm happy that there's snow on the ground, a surprise snowstorm that I don't think anybody even told us about. Just all of a sudden, on Super Bowl Sunday, it's snowing, and wow, it's sticking, and it's still here.
And yeah, snow and ice.
A lot of ice. Yeah, that adds to the fun. So cars getting stuck in places and people being inconvenienced. That's all I ask for.
All we would ever ask of weather. Uh-huh. I mean, weather's supposed to be something that you take note of and caution.
It's winter. You know, yeah. It should be cold in winter. And
why not?
It's been below freezing, and that's good. That's what it should be, below mm-hmm. freezing. Of course, it's probably going to get into the 50s or something in a couple of days. But, boy, if it stayed this way, I'd be happy. You know, from December through March, I'd be happy if it just stayed below freezing.
Yeah, and, well, it all looks as though you're going to be really happy. It's going to be just your luck, because things look very cold and bitter ahead. So,
okay.
You know, it's perfect and I don't know, just what you're asking for, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So everybody, stay tuned. Be thrilled. We have an exciting, action-packed hour here for you.
Yeah, I'm not sure you might be overselling it a little bit, but sure, it's going to be pleasant, I think.
Super pleasant.
If you're out there driving or you can't figure out how to tune to a different station.
No, don't do it. Keep your hands on the wheel. You're fine. You're fine. We got you. We got you for the next hour.
Sounds a little threatening, but yeah, I guess you don't have a choice. but no, you do. You always have a choice. So yeah, Super Bowl Sunday. What do you think?
Oh, it was cool. It was a weird game. I don't know. I had a little bit of some planning errors. I think everybody tries to have a good plan for how they're gonna, you know, get festivities going, and sometimes things don't work out. But that was okay. We got past that,
hold
and
on.
We're not gonna talk about it because it's fine. Everything worked out in the end.
I think we should talk about it because I still think there's some healing that needs to be done.
Yeah, we just did. That was how we talked about it, and I feel so much better having spoken the way we did about it. And in fact, that's the important thing about radio, is that you can have these discussions and then move on and find other interesting topics that listeners can relate to.
You've been hanging out with Lee Zeldin? I mean, I've never seen anybody gloss over something so effortlessly and ignore something that is wrong that needs to be addressed.
Now,
wow. Hey, where'd you pick this up? That's a neat skill you got there.
Hold on, I have to take a sip of water.
That's not water. Wow. Okay, so that's...
I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
No, it's okay. We have this tradition. Yeah, we have our little quirks, our odd traditions. And one of the traditions that we have sort of instituted here is that on Super Bowl Sunday, we like to go out and get hot, spicy wings. And I know, that sounds ridiculous, I know. I don't know how it got started, but one year we just said, hey, you know, you feel like wings today? And yeah, so... It's caught on, of course. A lot of other people seem to be doing this now. It's the curse of being on the radio and talking about these things. So each year when we do this, it takes a little bit of planning, you know. So you have to place your order in advance. Usually you can do it online. You can do it on the phone. You can sometimes even go by. You know, I think one year we did go by the place in advance. Say, yeah, we want to place this order. We'll be by, you know, tomorrow to pick it up. And they tell you what time to come by so that they manage their crowds. You
places
know?
Have different ways of handling it, but usually every place has a system because they anticipate a rush that day, right?
Well, would you say no system is a system? I mean, I guess it is in a way. Because we found a place that has no system at all.
It seemed to be like an unattended sort of autonomous system gone haywire, or a one-direction-only system.
Here's the thing. The kickoff was at about 6:30. We placed the order 2 days in advance, Friday. We placed the order. And there are a list of times, what time we'd like to pick up. And, you know, the ideal time is about 5:30, an hour in advance, plenty of time to get back and get set up and all that. It was 2 days in advance, so I figured, okay, 5:30 is open, so... I guess that's the advantage of registering early.
Right, right. And so logically, you'd think, and I know I'm no production engineer, but you'd think that a place that has a certain rate, a certain amount of staff and resources, they would have a system that regulates the flow of orders.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've been doing it that way for years.
And then maybe has like a maximum threshold.
And there have been times when we haven't gotten the time that we wished.
And then they bump you to that time,
we
right?
were told, yeah, you can't come at 5:30, you have to come at 4:30. And it's like, okay, you know, I guess next time we'll do it a little bit earlier so we get the time that we want.
Or it's like grayed out. And
another time they said, if you don't, you know, come at 4:30, then you can pick up at 9:30 or something crazy like that. So, okay, you know, we've been trained. Unfortunately, the place we picked this year, I guess we shouldn't name them. They're in Center Reach. How about that? They're a wing place in Center Reach on Route 20. Well, everything's on Route 25 in Center Reach. It's right near Nichols Road. I'm not going to give directions on how to get there. Why would I do that? Look, you'll figure it out, okay? It's got a wing in the name.
If you're standing by the smoke shop, you can see it. It's like across on the same side of the street.
Well, don't talk about the smoke shop. That's not even legal. We can't talk about smoke shops on the air, can we? Can we? I'm told we can. When did that change? Okay, we can talk about smoking. You want to talk about smoke shops?
I don't know if that's exactly what it is. That's how I would describe it. But,
what do you do in a smoke shop? You just go in there?
But the other places...
You can't actually smoke in a smoke shop, can you?
The other places that you go, I think you just smoke in front of the smoke shop.
No, you can't smoke on the sidewalk.
Well, you can't, 26 feet away, yeah.
Then you're in the street.
If you can levitate and you were 26 feet in the air, you could smoke up there.
Well, that's later in the year.
You're still on a sidewalk.
When that becomes completely legal. Okay, but let's get back to the wing place. Because
usually we pick other chains or smaller places that maybe are attached to a bar that are doing it anyway. We've tried other chains.
Yeah, I think that's your best bet is to go to independent, individual places. You found out about this chain. Which we hadn't gone to before.
I don't
want to
get into that. I just knew a name, just like I knew another different name.
And you suggested it.
I was asked, you know, we need to find a place to get these sorts of appetizers
for
this
event. How we
got
there really doesn't matter at this point.
No,
the point is that we picked this place and we selected 5:30, 2 days in advance, and
you know,
we showed up.
You could have said, I think we should go to this type of place. What would that work for you? Do you have any other suggestions? No, you commanded me.
That's harsh. I didn't command. I simply said, oh, look, it's Super Bowl Sunday coming up, and I think that's how the conversation got started.
So anyway, we end up at this place. It's our destiny, right?
Well, that's kind of dark. I don't know if it was our destiny.
Well, we placed the order with the best intentions, with the best hopes and, you know, feeling like we're taken care of. The universe will provide.
They were good intentions, but not the best intentions. I saved those for special occasions.
It was a good faith purchase.
Fine. Let's leave it at that. And we showed up exactly at 5:30. I take great pride in showing up precisely on the nose. And it was, you know, my clock said 5:30 right as we pulled in. So our first indication of trouble was the parking lot, where we saw all kinds of vehicles there. I figured we're going to walk right in. We're going to pick up what we ordered at 5:30. And then we saw the mob outside the place. And it was basically, this is what I like, though. This is what I like. People just sort of run things on their own. There was this big guy at the door who you know is a volunteer fireman. You just know he is. He's standing at the door, holding the door open, and basically bellowing out names of people who are being called at the counter, which is inside, which nobody can get into because it's so mobbed with people. And, you know, really good-natured and all that. And everybody is standing there in line saying, hey, what time did you get? And turns out we're there at 5:30. They're only calling out names from 5 o'clock. So right away, the whole timing thing makes no sense whatsoever. Basically what the system was no system at all, where if you picked the time, yeah, you got the time. It didn't matter if 100 other people picked the same time. They just gave you the time and told you to show up. And that's what everybody did. So there were over 100 people there, all expecting to get wings at the exact same time. And, of course, nobody was. It was, you know, this is a situation where you can really get irate. And there was at least one person that did get irate. You ever see The Sopranos, the character Christopher Moltisanti? Imagine him angry. and, you know, on his cell phone, talking to somebody about the massive amounts of people and how he's going to miss the beginning of the game and all that. That guy was there, I swear to God.
Well, and imagine this is a large franchise or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Every restaurant using the same system, having the same problem across, like, nationwide.
Nationwide.
And becoming renowned just because someone cut a corner or didn't really think through how the software
would
work.
How do you not know this by this? You know, we've been doing this for several years, and we know that, you know, when a large amount of people are there, you have to somehow control that crowd
and
stagger the times.
Smaller establishments that have figured it out, that don't seem to have the same issue. In fact, it's very quick. You're
anyway,
done, you're out the door, it's over.
That guy I mentioned, he was the only person I saw who was irate. Everybody else was really patient, in a good mood, and this is what I liked, people taking care of each other. And I realized, you know, we're standing there with all these football fans. We don't really get into the game that much. It's more the event. And all these people are just basically looking out for each other and, you know, spreading information, nobody really getting angry or impatient. I kept hearing people saying, "Oh, it's not their fault," and that. Okay, but you know what? It was their fault. They're the ones that have this crazy ass system that doesn't work. So you know, that's a bit too gracious, I believe. It was their fault, but still, you know, I wasn't going to yell at them, and no, I didn't see anybody else yelling at them either. I saw people just basically seeing the humor of the situation. It was snowing outside in the cold. It was snowing, and I realized, you know, all these people. How many of them are the people that we talk about week after week? You know, people who support, you know, that other guy or believe things that we don't believe in or that we're usually not agreeing with. But in a situation like that, you get along. And in so many situations, you get along. When we drove across the entire country, didn't have a single issue with anybody because it wasn't about that. And I think that's what we, and including us, forget about many times because we're sort of thrown into a situation of conflict and controversy, but in a situation where you're just trying to, you know, get food for the game, you're all in the same boat. And I just wish we were on that level more.
Totally. The thing that came to mind for me when I was sitting there is that, what happened? I kept thinking over and over again, repeating in my head, what happened? Like, how did this occur? And eventually people were theorizing about exactly how you described and we've gone into already, the scheduling and whatever that was that made it occur. And I think you're right. It is really terrible management, and you're really stressing your employees. Like, I mean, already people in a service job sweating, you know, putting all this stuff, just hustling, and they were slammed.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, having people who are, you know, new workers, you know, this may be the first or second job ever or something, having to face that kind of work environment plus, you know, as we said, a crowd of people that are all, like, really intent on, committed and intent on getting their order. One guy actually came back in with an order that was incorrect. He didn't actually get any wings. Eventually, people were starting to stream the game because it had started, so they changed the channel on a TV in there, and then everybody was watching the game.
I wasn't watching the game. I didn't want it to be ruined. In fact, you know, I was we were there for over 2 hours, just to give you an example, you know, an indication of how bad this was. And the game had started, but I didn't want to ruin the game. I wanted to watch the game and have the whole thing play out. And I realized, you know, we're DVRing it, so we're just going to delay time for, you know, an hour and a half or whatever.
That was my thought, too. It was like, time shifting is there for a reason. It's not a big deal.
But while, you know, I was aware the game was on, I was trying not to look at the TV, but occasionally I did by accident. And then everybody cheered at one point, and I realized, okay, somebody scored. But as, you know, later on, we had our wings, we were walking triumphantly to the car, I said to you, yeah, somebody scored, but I don't know who it was, probably. And then you told me who it was, thinking that I was asking you who scored. And I was actually just proclaiming the fact that I was proud that I didn't know who scored. I was trying to, you know, keep it a secret until we saw it for real. Okay,
and
so
I might never have said anything.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't really matter. We don't really care that much. I did want Cincinnati to win. I'm kind of upset that they didn't.
Yeah, I, in my heart, felt that, you know, they really should win in a lot of ways, but I picked the West Coast team.
Yeah, I know you did.
In fairness. And, you know, they, I think they they were the ones that played the game.
Well, it just seemed to me, especially at the end, they just kept getting second chances to get a first down over and over again because of penalties until, you know what, just give them the damn touchdown already. And eventually that's what happened and they won the game.
I don't know how it works. All I know is they are the champions.
But the thing is, you know, people say baseball's a boring game. I think football's a boring game. I really do, because it moves so slowly, and you're basically just, you know, going up a couple of yards. Why do we use yards? I don't understand that. Why don't we use meters? I don't get that. But it plods so slowly. Sometimes you throw a long pass, and it's exciting. Okay, but usually it's not. And at the end, you knew what was going to happen. You knew that Los Angeles was just going to fall on the football and let the clock run out. And whenever you do something like that, that's not a game. That's not a game. It's just, it's a strategy, sure, but it's a dull strategy. I just wish there was more action and you know, things happening quickly. Like, you know, in rugby or in Gaelic football or hurling or Aussie rules. Yeah, all those. They all have a lot more action.
Yes, yes, the CFL.
The Canadian Football League, yeah. There's more action in the Canadian Football League. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why we don't do more with them.
Anyway, as I was not complaining, and as far as adversity, I had thought of many lines I've been in around the world, mm-hmm. and this was nothing. It was a real delightful time, and definitely it worked up an appetite for the game and everything. So that was great, and a cultural phenomena, to be sure. But so much else is going on. This world is a rapid, dynamic and crazy place at this time.
Well, yeah, I just want to stick with the Super Bowl for a second because there was some controversy.
Oh.
If you recall, at the beginning, we were watching all the anthems and things. I don't understand. When did we get more than one anthem? I mean, America the Beautiful, you know, I prefer that song. And then the Star Spangled Banner. But, you know, do we have to have both? Why do we even have one? I don't get why we have to sing the national anthem before games. But whatever. If we're going to do that, okay, have one. But instead, they had two. They had America the Beautiful, which was sung by, and forgive me if I pronounced the name wrong, Jehenny Aiko, and the national anthem, sung by country star Mickey Goyton, both women of color. And what happened was Guyton was captioned incorrectly, identifying her as Aiko. Yeah. We saw that happen because we saw the same name. You know, I don't know either person, so I would have gotten it wrong too probably. But basically we saw the name, and then we saw the name under a different person, and that didn't make sense. I was confused that there were two people in front of microphones. I don't understand why they did it that way. Why couldn't they have the same microphone and not have two people standing at a microphone at the same time? Anyway, fans went ballistic, basically accusing NBC of racism, saying all black people don't look alike. I don't think in this case that's what happened. I really don't. I think what happened was somebody hit the wrong switch and just, you know, didn't know which microphone was going to go live first. It wasn't the same person that had the caption going. I think that's a lot more likely. You don't know the color of the person who made the mistake, so I don't think you can really say this is, by default, something racist. I think it was just something confusing, maybe a little bit incompetent, but it was quickly fixed. And not to say that the NFL is not rampant with racism, or that you know, even NBC, I'm sure you can find many examples of that, but this, I just think people were a bit too quick to assume the worst.
Yeah, if there were both two male singers or something, you know, that were Caucasian and they were misidentified, I don't know that people would be as outraged. They'd be like, oh, yeah, sure. Somebody's just not a fan of either. And, yeah, it's hard to keep up with all that.
I just don't know why we have two national anthems. I mean, enough. Where's it going to end? Actually, there was a third.
There was a lot of preamble singing. Mm-hmm. Just to get the game going.
Lift Every Voice and Sing, which is widely considered to be the black national anthem. That was before. I would like to just have that. But pick one. Pick one song. I mean, it's a football game. Not a, you know. Actually, it is a concert, though, because halftime.
Yeah.
Wow. Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg.
Yep. Absolutely.
Did I tell you about the time I actually hung out with Dr. Dre? I didn't hang out with Dr. Dre. I told you. I don't know if I told the people on the radio. But a friend and I were listening to non-commercial radio. And this is what happens, folks. If you listen to non-commercial radio, we listen to 90.3 in Brooklyn. Now, the station wasn't in Brooklyn. We were in Brooklyn. And the reason I was listening to 90.3 is because, obviously, I was trying to get 90.1, and that doesn't happen in Brooklyn, so I got the next best thing, which was a station in Nassau County at 90.3. I forget which one it was because there were two at the time. We heard Flavor Flav live on the radio. He was going back to his old school, and he was there live. So my friend and I said, you know what, let's go there. Let's drive to that station and meet him. And that's exactly what we did. We found the station, knocked on the door. There he was, friendly as can possibly be. And wouldn't you believe, we all went out to White Castle, and Dre was there as well. He was not Dr. Dre then. He was just Dre. And the funny thing is that Dre had to carry all the White Castle bags because Flavor Flav would not do that. So yeah, that was my memory of Dre. Do you have any memories of rap superstars?
Not like that. No. No, I don't really have a close proximity, but I did enjoy.
You just have to knock on the door.
Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar, there's a lot of symbolism and like that house party set was pretty incredible.
This is halftime. Yeah, halftime show was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and spectacular. Really a good time, and they really tied in a lot of the cinema stuff, of course, it being in L.A., and that's super fun and stuff because, of course, we've been enjoying a lot of cinema-related things ourselves here, and so that was great. I'm sure other people either did or did not watch that event, but as I was saying, the world's a crazy place, and there's no exception. There's been a lot going on up in the border in Canada. There's been a lot going on with health exceptions and changes to masks. I think Stony Brook still requires masks for in-person learning.
Last I checked, but I think we can see the finish line. I'm pretty sure. Here's the thing, though. We've been listening to a lot of the communication up north between the truckers and the blockade people. Boy, they sound like nice folks, don't they? They sound so homey and friendly. But then they go and they basically tear into Black Lives Matter people because they're all rioters and they're all anarchists and they're just driving people away. There was a cache of weapons that was found yesterday at one of the border crossings in a truck. That was very serious, especially in Canada, very serious. We're talking hundreds of guns and a ton of ammunition. And I heard them talking on their communication system today saying that, yeah, obviously that was planted by the police because it's not them. And just everything that is bad about them, they ignore. They make up things about their perceived enemies, like why liberals are so violent and filled with hatred and just things that make you wince when you hear it because they sound like nice people. Like I said, they sound very pleasant until they start saying the things that are just so wrong. And that's not even getting into the vaccine and COVID and all that. It's just and I see a lot of people who call themselves liberals who are trying to be fair. I think that's one of the big mistakes here because if you try too hard to be fair, you wind up really being unfair. And some of them are saying things like, "Yeah, you know, they're upset at the gap between the haves and the have-nots, and you know they're as upset as you know at Trump as they are at Biden." And they're not. They're not. You're assuming they are thinking it through rationally when they're not. Because listening to these people, they never say a word of criticism against people like Trump or against the Conservative Party up in Canada. It's all about Trudeau. It's all about Biden. And it's all about just the people on the other political side. If it was about all of them, then I would listen to them a lot more and take them seriously. But when you have different politicians from different parties doing the same thing, but you only attack one of them, you're not really attacking the issue. You're attacking the person, and you're attacking the party. And that is, you know, very revealing as to what your motivations really are.
Yeah, believing that from them is, I think, part of the veneer, the sort of PR blitz of them being about everyday people who are just fed up with masks. That's not it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the political bent behind this. That's not the political money behind this. They're really upset about the donations. I was just before we aired, they were getting into hacking back doors and trying to figure out how things, you know, got stopped or whatever.
Right.
We'll have to check back in. But it's, I think, so well beyond reasoned discussion about that. And I think you're right. There's a lot of people that are like, oh, they seem, you know, awful, you know, approachable, relatable, and you know, reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the latter is the misnomer. That is not what's going on here. This is not a reasonable occurrence. It's been almost a month now, and there's been an incredible amount of tolerance for this, and at the cost of many, many people around this effort. And I think easing some of the restrictions, it may seem like a bit of a concession, but I think they timed that stuff specifically to maybe appease those who might go home because this is escalating.
Well,
you know,
look, the important thing is, as far as restrictions being eased, it's got nothing to do with the blockade people. It has nothing at all to do with them. And I know this because we've been talking about this for months. As soon as Omicron happened, there were predictions as to when it would peak and when it would start to ebb, and they were predicting early on that it would ebb rather fast. And we were all looking at early spring, late winter as a time when things might start getting better. That's what's happening. And the only reason you're seeing restrictions being eased is because we've reached that level. For instance, here in Suffolk County, the positivity rate from tests was well over 30% at one point. Now it's below 4%. So obviously that is a good thing, and that is when you take action like you said you were going to do and start easing up on things. It's not because of blockade. It's not because of people acting like babies. It's not because of people that are insisting on getting their way and not caring about anybody else. No, it's because most of us have done the responsible thing. Most of us have gotten vaccines. Most of us have worn masks when advised to wear masks. And it's not always going to be right. There are going to be mistakes. There are going to be inaccuracies. It's really easy to make fun of people in charge because they're going to make mistakes. But that doesn't mean that mistakes were made intentionally or that there's some big nefarious plot that's going on out there. The thing we have to look at, the thing we have to be really concerned with is what this is leading to. The fact that the blockade organizers in Canada initially were saying they need to get Trudeau out and install their own people, you know, bypassing elections and things like that. There are people there saying that. Not everybody is, but there are enough people saying that where this is a real issue. They were at one point talking about the Nazi flags that were showing up at the rallies in Ottawa. You know, basically minimizing them, saying, well, that doesn't represent us. But you know what? It's the Antifa people are just as bad. Basically saying, yeah, you know, Nazis, they're not that bad. The Black Lives Matter people, they're bad. And Antifa people, they're, you know, minimizing them and basically just dismissing it entirely. Starting out saying, yeah, it doesn't represent us, but very quickly going over to the, well, you know what? They're welcome to be at our rally. Just we don't want any BLM people at our rallies.
And they don't have a clear comparison, I think, because historically, like, Nazis have been proved that ideology has demonstrated impacts and been guilty, right? And I think comparing it to people who are first of all not guilty of anything close to the same kind of acts, like breaking a chain coffee store window at a WTO protest, I think is entirely different than this genocide of last century and you know the sort of revival of it in this far right ideology coming back. It's not at all it's not at all the same to just sort of soft downplay something like that and say that because people disrupt or otherwise push back against hate speech with confrontational tactics and are willing to put themselves out there, that they're somehow capable, and this is what happens. It becomes, well, they believe in this, so they're going to do all of this, and you're going to be so victimized by this specter. They want you to the fear that Democratic policies or liberal governments will have any kind of impact on their lives. Even if it benefits their lives, right? That's the craziness of it. Mm-hmm. That it's some big scary thing to be scared of versus something that actually has historical scariness.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the minimizing of that. They're not necessarily going out saying, "Yeah, we need to massacre people or commit genocide or anything like that." It's the minimizing, saying, "Yeah, they're bad, but these people are bad too. And they're just as bad." And yeah, that is really the stepping stone to repeating history. You know, you have a Nazi problem if the Nazis agree with you and you don't kick them out. That's when you have a Nazi problem, and they have a Nazi problem. And that goes to the January 6th people, that goes to Trump rallies, it goes to so many things. So we're watching that situation. They just announced that they're going to be imposing the Emergency Act, whatever they call it up there, that allows all kinds of steps to be taken, some of which seem a little over the top. And the problem that I think Trudeau has right now is that he's going to invoke this thing, and a bunch of the ministers of provinces don't want it. And you need to have a lot of people supporting this, otherwise it'll seem like overreach. Basically, the question that has to be asked is, what do we want to come out of this? Now, they want the blockades to end. They want the economy to stop being crippled by these protesters who are basically stopping border traffic, which I understand has been reopened to an extent. But, you know, the city of Ottawa is still under siege, and that's affecting a lot of people. Now, you can fix all this by simply imposing laws or enforcing laws without imposing new strategies or things that have not ever been enacted in history. I don't know if you need to do that. I think you just need to follow the law as it is. And that's what the police in Ottawa have not been doing. In fact, their commissioner, whose name, believe it or not, is Slowly, he resigned today because he's been under a lot of fire for not doing enough to stop this. And make no mistake, the cops can stop this. I've seen them do it to all kinds of other protests. I don't know why it's different here. Maybe a lot of cops agree with them. Who knows? Maybe they're afraid of trucks. I don't know. But the thing is, they need to do what they are paid to do, and that's keep streets safe and work for the people. And the vast majority of people don't want this right now. So I don't think you need to have an Emergency Powers Act, you know, put into place, because that just, I think it might get a lot more people over onto the wrong side. I really do. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. By the way, we have been posting the intercepted audio that we're getting from various communications with these blockade organizers. You can go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/channel2600, and just click on videos, and you'll see a whole bunch of them that have been posted every single day. We're going to see what they say, what they do, what they plan. It's fascinating to listen to. And again, don't be deceived. You'll hear all kinds of nice, friendly, homey people. But occasionally somebody drops something that just, wow, how did you get there? And nobody calls them on it.
Occasionally people do. There are people dropping in trying to engage, and as I said,
those are called trolls. That's what they call them, trolls.
Right. They call them trolls, and they get really sensitive to that. Mm-hmm.
And they're quickly silenced.
Yes, react to squash the, quote, trolls. But, yeah, I don't know. It's perhaps just... good thing to keep people talking in any hostage negotiation, you know, whether that be for a city or otherwise.
hey, I'm off with talking. I'm off with, but they are doing something that is very harmful right now. You know, they're intimidating people. They're blowing horns outside their homes. They're stopping commerce. They're causing more problems than the virus caused as far as shutting down the economy. So you don't get to complain about how bad the economy is doing if you're the one that's breaking it. So we need to speak up a little louder. And, of course, we're going to be seeing more of this in the States as well.
A lot of domestic stuff in there. It's been weird to hear support from various states and stuff south of Canada.
Not surprising. In fact, a lot of the money has been coming from the states. Has been coming from politicians.
Peter Thiel, that group. Yeah. Oh,
it's terrible.
Yeah, we see you.
Oh, sorry. It's time. We haven't done this in a while. It's time for our sustaining feature, Films of the Year That Was, where we venture back into time and see an Academy Award winning film from every year since the Academy Awards began back in the 20s. We are up to 2013. We saw two films, the international winner and the domestic winner. Shall we start with the international winner? What was the name of that one?
The Great Beauty.
The Great Beauty.
It's actually La Grande Bellezza.
Ah, you said the English version this time first. Okay. It's an Italian film, I believe.
It is.
Okay, we saw that a couple days ago, so I've already forgotten what it was about. It's
directed by Paolo Sorrentino. It's about a journalist, a seasoned journalist who is content. He's a 65-year-old,
butterfly
character. Yeah, he goes from party to party and a socialite, or I don't know.
A typical 65-year-old.
Yeah. Well, no, he he says he wants to be the king of it. He didn't just dabble in it, but after time, he wanted to just rule it, be the center of this this life, this high society life of partying and sort of hedonism and stuff.
It was weird. I mean, there are a lot of strange scenes in there, a lot of crazy people, but you know, it's got that kind of Fellini style to it. I think it was trying a little hard to be like a Fellini film.
Colorful and undulating. Like, there's just this background festive thing, and then these wistful and more beautiful introspective parts.
Yeah.
I'm not remembering all of that. I'm remembering the ruckus parts more.
It just seemed like a celebration in many ways, but it sure went on for a long time, and I'm not really sure where it was going, or was it going anywhere?
Yeah, like there was this strange performance, a woman who like basically ran into a wall.
Oh yeah,
like
full speed.
Yeah, just like this dramatic thing of bandaging her head and then like running full speed into a wall. There was another guy who crashed a car. These very strange spectacles that are a part of this world.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, you know, people are weird, and there certainly were a lot of weird people in this film. But basically, if I had to sum it up as to what was going on there, it's basically this guy turns 65, has a huge party, and hangs out with a bunch of his friends. And I can't really describe it beyond that. Can you?
Just about how like superficial and fleeting, I guess, and I don't know, like some odd stories along the way, in various people he's interacting with. I don't remember all of it in the same way though. It just seemed to showcase this highlight, this sort of peak of his being in the community there. I don't know. He just had like a celebration of his career. And,
well, he had written one book, and everybody's asking, why didn't you write a second book?
Right.
And that, I guess, is the theme throughout the film. In fact, at one point, he meets this religious woman who's some kind of a leader. She's 105 years old. She's like a Mother Teresa type. And, you know, she's basically still going. She's climbing this huge staircase on her hands and knees because I don't know why exactly she was doing that, but that's what she does. He's basically trying to keep up with her, and she's also asking, why didn't you write another novel? all kinds of weird interactions like that.
It just is this, like, mark of a remarkable life he's led, and how things come back, especially when you're known for the certain work or whatever areas of interest or culture. You connect with the world in very odd ways. And she, yes, you're right, this religious person was just, like, magical, saintly, as is referred to. So it was incredible, like, her connection with chance and the world. There's a scene where she's out on the deck and there's just flamingos, and her understanding, and, like, deep understanding of just them being there at that moment, and her strength, but also her power. She seems fragile and an unlikely source of incredible strength, but you realize how strong she is in this and how powerful someone of such restraint might be. So that was really beautiful. I'm glad you caught that part too. I had forgotten. Should we move on to the other one?
Yes, the American film, or the domestic film.
Okay, this was directed by Steve McQueen, and it is called 12 Years a Slave.
I've heard of the film. I'd never seen the film, and I'm kind of shocked that I never did, because, wow. To basically sum it up, it's about, it takes place, what, in the 1840s, I believe?
1841. It's about Solomon Northup, who is a free-living African-American man.
Born in New York State.
In Saratoga, is a violinist and has a lovely wife, idyllic family there.
Okay, right away, at that point, they're showing his life in Saratoga, in New York. It seems a little bit too idealistic to me. Like, he's treated completely as an equal, in fact, you know, as somebody honored. I don't know, was society really that positive for African Americans in the 1840s in New York back then?
I think that question speaks so much to the reasons, like why do we know about Tulsa as much? How come that history is not told?
Right, right.
Like, we would have those sorts of things if those stories were told, but they weren't. And so, would we know if it was that well, if it was that good? I think you might have something there. It may have been exaggerated for the film, of course.
And basically, Solomon is tricked. While his wife is away doing something, he's tricked by these guys to go down to Washington, D.C., perform in something.
There's some foreshadowing. They talk about a circus type thing.
And he's there to earn some money, and it seems all positive. But then they drug him, and he wakes up in a cell chained to the wall, and he's basically kidnapped and brought to Louisiana and told that he is an escaped slave, which he is not. But they give him an identity of somebody who either did or didn't exist, and now he's stuck there. He's stuck there as a slave. And I got to tell you, you know, I've seen many films and series that document this period. This one, it just felt so real. I think the reason it felt so real is because there were so many scenes that just didn't have music, didn't have dialogue, just time where you witness something horrible. Like, at one point, he's nearly lynched, but stopped to the point where he has to stand on his tiptoes to prevent being strangled, and has to stand there for hours, literally, until his master gets back. I won't go into the details of how he got into that situation, but basically, you see that for, it felt like a half hour of just no words, just watching this, watching the people around him just going about their day-to-day lives while he's standing there trying to stay alive. In actuality, it was probably about 2.5-3 minutes. But still, that is an eternity in a film where you're feeling it, you know? You're feeling the horror, the pain. And there are countless scenes like that of beatings and various tortures. And my God, you know, this is the kind of film that every school kid needs to see. And, you know, it's also the kind of film that that we are seeing more resistance towards kids being exposed to. This is history. This is our history. It's a horrible time in history, but we damn well better be familiar with it. And if it makes you a bit uncomfortable, good. It should make you uncomfortable. It really should. It's very different from saying, oh, it's your fault. Nobody is saying that. But this is something that we cannot simply minimize, like we were talking about before with the blockade people. You can't minimize these horrors. You have to confront them head on. Otherwise, they're going to happen again in some form. And you are not going to have the necessary knowledge of where you come from, how we all came to be in this particular area. When you know that, when you have a sense as to the injustices that that form our foundation, well, then you can start acting to to do something to counter that in your present day life. But if you don't have that knowledge, if you don't have that exposure, it's like it never happened, and that's the worst thing imaginable.
Yeah, truly, that is dramatization was it was graphic. Really hard. I think a little bit older, so this probably wasn't made by the time I was in high school and so forth. So this is much later.
2013. So, we're actually getting pretty close to the present.
I think college and high school students would definitely get a lot out of this. This is the history that people are trying to ban, that they are going through and labeling as critical race theory. This is just history. You've said it before.
Oh,
I agree.
Yeah.
I'd been told to watch this film, and I'm glad we finally got to it. And it really just, as you said, you're in that agony with various moments, and there's also just the sheer beauty of the surroundings in New Orleans and the setting. It's amazing, like the beauty contrasted with the ugliness of what humans were driven to, and the sort of simplistic ideology, and how the stakes were so high that people wouldn't dare try to go and help a fellow slave, or they would trust someone who's there. I know there's a scene where there's a white person who's also harvesting cotton, I think, picking cotton.
Yeah, there were white people who worked alongside him. Of course, they got paid.
He was there for just a couple days or something.
They're working off debts or something, but
different treatment, and
they're as afraid of helping.
Solomon confides in him to send a letter. The first attempt to send this letter to maybe get some word to someone that he's been mistaken and kidnapped, and that guy betrays him.
Yeah.
And he has to basically play it off like, no, that guy was just saying that because he wanted some position.
He was able to not get punished himself by saying that guy obviously made up a story because it's absurd. How could I, you know, a black man, know how to write and want to send a letter? Who would I know up there? And he was able to convince his master that, yeah, the other guy must have been lying. So he's able to actually meet up with, of all things, a Canadian who is more honest and actually turns to his Christianity, his Christian upbringing, to say slavery is wrong. And it reminds me so much of what we see today, where people who purport to be religious turn a blind eye to all the hatred and horrors, and somehow claim that they're still religious. Whereas if you turn to the truly good that is in any religion, that is what should be the default, not the hatred, not the horrors. And it takes a rare person who's able to do that, especially when there's a majority of people who are blind to this. And it's just, it also reminds me of the present day to see how they look to the law, the slaveholders look to the law to back them up. Like, this guy is my property. I can do what I wish. And you know what? He's right. That's what the law says. He's your property. You can do whatever you want with him. And those people who are trying to free the slaves are the ones breaking the law. Well, sometimes the law is completely wrong. And sometimes the law needs to be overturned, changed, disobeyed, whatever. But
I think, yeah, the Carpenter's character, he says laws change.
Mm-hmm.
And but he says the moral right, that's immovable. That spans and does not matter. Whatever side you're on when you're talking about humans, and I think that it really does blast it out of the constraints when you hear how he's thinking about it versus this twisted household of the plantation. Whether you're talking about the wife or the warden who watches over everybody, or the owner themselves, or various parts of that whole system. Of course, the trader in the very first scene, you see him just selling them in a parlor. Visualizations mm-hmm. that are really disturbing, and, of course, a huge part of that history. And you can't – there's no easy way to visualize it and to tell the stories without really having impact. They took great care. It was a really vivid telling, and I can't say enough about it.
The thing that scares me the most is the normalcy that surrounds that world, where basically you see families of slaves being torn apart, mother being separated from her kids forever. And then you see the woman of the plantation, the wife of the master, comforting that poor slave woman who has just lost her children by saying, "Don't worry, your children will soon be forgotten." And that to her was the right thing to say. That to her was being a Christian woman and comforting this poor, unfortunate slave. And it's just. That to me is one of the most frightening things, when you just see the normalcy of horror, where people just say, "Yeah, you know, that's the law. I'm obeying the law, and that's how it is." We see that today as well.
And her jealousy, seeing that the slave owner was eyeing Patty, yeah, all of her motivations for disrupting that. Because she knew that he was coveting this property.
Yeah, and let's close with that. Basically, that's an example of how when someone does a really good job, she was bringing in something like 500 pounds of cotton a day, more than anybody else by far. That earned her the right to be raped by the slaveholder, by the plantation owner, and hated by his wife. Who threw a bottle at her face and permanently scarred her, and basically kept essentials from her, like soap, that made her walk to a different plantation to obtain, and then be severely punished, beaten almost to death for doing that. That is because she was a good worker.
Yeah.
So
totally exploited in so many different ways, to the point where she was trying to pay Solomon to kill her.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's a horrible story, but a story that is so essential to see. And if you haven't seen it, go out and see it. Go out and get this film, 12 Years a Slave. And if you're a teacher, you know, put your career on the line and just show this film in your class. I'd say high school. You know, maybe elementary school, it's a bit too much for them, but definitely talk about it to them. Absolutely. And these laws that they keep coming up with now, to prevent you from even bringing it up? Crazy. And we have to fight that with every ounce of our being.
How can you ban books and just... I can't believe it.
How can you talk over the outro like that? That was so disrespectful.
It's an outro. I'm just talking. It's a casual discussion.
We're legally forbidden from talking. Well, the next thing is our outro, because we're going to play a song actually from 12 Years a Slave.
Hans Zimmer.
Well, he did the theme, but this is What Does Freedom Mean? Something to think about, I guess. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and stay tuned for Finn coming up next.
What does it mean?
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
What does it mean? Oh, what does freedom mean to a free man? What does wine and roses mean to a dreamer? What does freedom mean?
nation mean to time? What does freedom mean to a
free man?
What does a part of me mean to a
free man?
What does freedom mean to the
free man?
What does a shepherd mean to the one who's strayed? What affection means to a lover in a day?
What does it mean?
Childhood never made me to be old.
What does freedom mean to a free man? What does freedom mean to a free man? What does freedom mean to a free man? What does freedom mean to a free man?
What imagination means to a book? What life and fire mean to the cook? Tell me.
What does it mean
to a free man? Can somebody tell?